And it's the Juno afternoon. Today is Tuesday, the 15th of December. It's a few seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, your host this Tuesday afternoon. We have some great guests today. Carolyn Goodwin will be here to talk about a reading she's going to be doing with Ishmael Hope and about her poetry and a book of poetry that she's recently published. Emily Cote-Thompson will highlight the Parents as Teachers program and early childhood events in the community. We'll hear about KTOO's Serial Podcast Listening Party coming up at COPA. And we're going to get an update on activities at both JDHS and TMHS. That in addition to Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, all the other things you like to listen to here on a Juno afternoon. Stay tuned for National Native News, and we'll be back with our guest as soon as that is over.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Police in Canada have arrested a man in connection to the death of an Aboriginal girl in Manitoba more than a year ago. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, her case intensified calls for a national investigation into missing and murdered women and girls, something that will now happen.
It was in August of last year that police pulled the body of 15-year-old Tina Fontaine out of the Red River in Winnipeg. She had run away from her home where she lived with her aunt and uncle on the Sidekeen First Nation and headed to Winnipeg. In the Manitoba capital, she was in the care of Child and Family Services and was being housed at a hotel. She ran away from that hotel and from child care workers. Her body was found less than 2 weeks later. 53-year-old Raymond Cormier was arrested by police in Vancouver in connection with Fontaine's death. Police say the two had met on several occasions at a Winnipeg residence both had frequented. Cormier has a long criminal history that includes violence. Thelma Favelle is Fontaine's great aunt. She says she's still struggling with the loss.
It's never, ever going to be over because she's gone forever. So even with them catching him, it's never going to be over.
Tina's death also intensified calls for a national inquiry into missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls, something the new Canadian government announced will now happen. Carolyn Bennett is the Federal Minister of Indigenous and Northern Affairs.
Tina was a girl. It became household words that people knew this had to stop, and I think it did galvanize the nation.
The Grand Chief of Northern Manitoba First Nations, Sheila North Wilson, said her heart goes out to Tina's family, and she prays they feel some sense of relief over the arrest. And Winnipeg's Deputy Police Chief said Tina was a child, and her death shocked and outraged the community and was felt across the country. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A substitute village police officer from a dry community in Alaska is in jail awaiting trial, charged with supplying alcohol to a minor last month and raping her. He received an award this year from the Alaska Federation of Natives. And as KNOM's Emily Russell reports, his case raises questions about how VPOs are vetted.
Brent Norton was presented with an award at AFN for his response to a shooting in Selawik this summer.
The Glenn Godfrey Law Enforcement Award is given to Alaska Native law enforcement officer who has shown outstanding dedication to the safety of the public in Alaska. The Glenn Godfrey Law Enforcement Award goes to Putnamu Brent James Norton from Selawik.
29-year-old Norton allegedly supplied a 16-year-old girl with alcohol and later raped her while she was unconscious. The Selawik Clinic received a call from Norton just before 1 a.m. when he described the girl as cold and not breathing. Emergency responders spent 20 minutes trying to resuscitate her before she was declared dead. But Norton's record was far from clean before this year. In both 2006 and 2012, Norton was charged and pled guilty to transporting alcohol to a dry village. Then in June of this year, he was charged with giving alcohol to a 13-year-old girl. So how did he get hired as a substitute VPO in a dry village? Chris Hatch, program coordinator for Village Public Safety Officers in the Northwest Arctic Borough, explains.
According to Alaska statute, only a village can hire a village police officer.
To be clear, a VPSO, which is what Hatch oversees, goes through extensive training and vetting compared to what a VPO is put through. But there are some safeguards in place. For example, a person convicted of a felony in the last 10 years is ineligible. The incident in June of this year, when Norton supplied alcohol to a minor, was a Class C felony. But Norton was a substitute VPO, so under even less scrutiny. Norton's involvement in the death of a Selawik teen will add another felony to his record if he's convicted. I'm Emily Russell.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the National Indian Health Board. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace ends January 31st. Many Indian health clinics are hosting enrollment events with help available. You may qualify for low-cost plans, zero copays, and deductibles. More info at healthcare.gov/tribal.
Kwanek Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, taking place February 18, 2016 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kwanek's news programming. Learn more at knba.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's 6 minutes or so after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today's Tuesday, the 15th of December, and this is a Juneau afternoon. And I want to welcome Carolyn Goodwin here to the show to talk about poetry and Ishmael Hope, what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, hi.
So welcome to Juneau.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I guess a little background about you first and foremost. I see from the biography on the back of this new book of poetry, Peregrine, that you were born and raised in Alaska.
I was.
Here in Southeast or somewhere else?
No, I was born in Anchorage in 64.
All right.
A few months after the big earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandparents lived in Sitka. So my grandparents came from Iowa in the early 20s.
Wow.
Yes, with Sheldon Jackson College, school then. And so I visited Sitka off and on as a child to see my grandparents, my mom's mom and dad, Les and Caroline Yaw. And
after whom the chapel is named,
mm-hmm,
at the Sheldon Jackson campus.
Correct.
All right. I thought I recognized that distinctive surname.
Yep. Yep. Yes. It's kind of everywhere around there. So, so I lived in Sitka for about 15 years before I moved to California. But I was born and raised in Anchorage.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I was born and raised in Anchorage, too,
yeah,
a few years after you. So it's it's changed a lot, more than most other places in Alaska. But if you look hard enough, Anchorage still has some very charming features.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it up there.
Good. So now you live in San Mateo, California.
I do. I live actually on the San Mateo coast, about half an hour south of San Francisco in a little town called Monterra. And so I can hear the ocean from my yard crashing on the beach, which is really nice. And it's a small town far enough away from the city to feel like a smaller place, you know, so it's nice that way.
But close enough that if you feel like you want to do something fancy and urban, San Francisco is really not that far away.
I can be fancy and urban in half an hour.
That is the best of both worlds, it sounds like,
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
And so you live there, and do you find that living in California now inspires different things in your work as a poet?
Definitely. You know, it's so funny because coming here, like I came here last winter and taught a few workshops through 49 Writers, which I'm doing again this time I'm here. But, you know, thinking about Alaska, being from Alaska and having had so many early life experiences here, I really am very more and more and more interested in the place and kind of getting more obsessed with what happens here. And now that it's very easy with Facebook and social networking to kind of keep up with the news. And so it has definitely changed my relationship with Alaska to not live in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. In a way, maybe you appreciate it more. You can't take it for granted when you're not here.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly, you know, when I come and it's such a special place, you know.
Absolutely.
In so many different ways, you know, just the landscape and then the people, and there's a lot going on here.
There is.
A lot of really, really cool, important stuff. So,
and things that don't go on, well, I guess you can't say they don't go on anywhere else, but things happen differently here in a way than they happen other places.
Yeah, and I think certain things are more visible here. And then there's also, as a human species dealing with climate disruption, so that's on everyone's minds in a different way up here, too, I think, sometimes.
Absolutely. So I'm looking at some of the notes about what you're going to be doing while you're here in Juneau, and I think you have a performance, an event this evening, don't you?
I do.
So no rest for the weary. You just got in this afternoon. And so let's talk about what is going to be happening this evening, and that's going to be in conjunction with our good friend Ishmael Hope.
Yes, he is just such a wonderful poet, and I'm be sharing the stage with him for the third time in my life, which makes me really happy. He was in California, and when his book came out, The Wonderful Courtesans of Flounder Hill from Ishmael Reed Publishing, And he read from that, and Ishmael Reed also shared the stage. We had an event at the place where I teach in San Francisco, so that was really special for me. And then I think it was the fall of 2011 when I first heard Ishmael Reed, his wonderful poem, Storyteller, at the A&B Hall in Sitka, and I was just very moved by that poem, and I still love that poem. And also tonight, my friend Cray Van Kirk, who sang at my wedding when I got married to Nick in Sitka in 1996, he will also be playing music and kind of hosting and being a friend.
Excellent. And that, the venue for that this evening is the new Downtown Heritage site, correct?
That's what I'm told.
That's what I'm told, too. So if I'm wrong, anyone, I guess you can blame
me.
Look
around.
Yes, look around. You'll figure it out.
Walk around and ask.
And I actually don't have the starting time in front of me, but I'm going to guess it wouldn't be any earlier than 7 p.m. to allow people to get there.
You know what? I'm told it's at 6.
Oh, okay.
That's what the Facebook, that's what the old social networking is saying. So.
If it's on Facebook, it's true.
That's right.
I mean, Facebook never
lies.
That's
what I tell all my students, right?
Okay, so very clearly then, 6 o'clock this evening will be the beginning of reading with Ishmael Hope, Carolyn Goodwin, and music by Juno's own Cray Van Kirk, who is a very talented musician.
Mm-hmm.
I've emceed the concerts in the park, and he's been one of the performers more times than I can count. But that's not all you're going to be doing while you're here in Juno. What else do you have planned for your time here?
So I am teaching a 3-hour workshop called List and Litany on Thursday night at the Taku Graphics New Space. And that is just to get together and talk about how you can use, or we can as writers and artists, use the list form to break through any writer's block, or even, you know, take it through to a finished poem that has a list. Like, I love lists, and I think it's a very interesting way to generate new material, but it also, you know, you think about some of the great poems of Walt Whitman and how he used long lists and long lines, and it's kind of a freeing process. So we'll be doing that together on Thursday night from 6 through 9.
Okay, great. And Ishmael's going to be co-teaching that with you?
No, it's just me.
Okay,
that's
okay.
It's just me, flying solo.
Okay, and so how do people, tonight if they want to come to the reading and the musical performance, they can just show up at 6 o'clock.
Indeed.
But for the 49 Writers sponsored list of writing.
List and Litany, yes. The 49 Writers website has a link, and you can just register for the class on there, and you'll show up on my roster, and I'll meet you on Thursday night.
Okay, great. And there may be, is there some probably maybe some space limitations, so people would want to not delay if they're going to sign
right
up for
if
that?
You, yes, there are space limitations. So
okay, very
there's
good.
There's some left at this point in time.
Very good. And so that's the 49 Writers. If you search for that, you'll find they have their own standalone website, and
mm-hmm.
that's how to register for the List and Litany teaching opportunity. And then tonight at 6 o'clock at Downtown Heritage, so we believe. But look on Facebook for the gospel truth on that.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you, Carolyn, is you are a poet laureate in California for San Mateo County.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would just talk about that a little bit, because we, of course, have a writer laureate in Alaska.
Right.
We don't have counties. And I think we're probably a far way from having borough poet or writer laureates.
Right.
But I'm not going to forestall that possibility.
Well, you never know. Yeah.
But you said, I think, before that you were the first one in San Mateo County.
I am. So yeah, San Francisco City and County has had a poet laureate for several rounds, you know, two-year posts of poets laureate in the city there. And Santa Clara County is just coming on its fourth poet laureate. And so the county poets laureate serve a two-year term. And San Mateo County, which is sandwiched in between San Francisco and Santa Clara counties, said, well, you know, we better catch up with these other counties around here. So they called for applications and received like 15 applications. And then there was a round, and we had interviews and gave a reading. And it's just been a pleasure. I've served 2 years, and I agreed to stay another year to help set up for the next poet laureate, and we'll be looking for the next one. But San Mateo County is just a great place. It has beautiful libraries, all sorts of different languages and cultures. There's more than 700,000 people who live in San Mateo County, and it's got some of the most extreme, like it has East Palo Alto, which if you know, a lot of us know is, the murder capital of America, but that's only because it's a tiny town and they don't report the good news, which was, you know, the people getting out there and stopping the crack epidemic from the streets, and people doing really good things for their town. So, and then right next to that is Atherton, which is, you know, multi-million dollar mansions. And so it's very diverse and exciting place, and beautiful, beautiful trails and redwoods and coastline and the bay. So it's just a terrific place.
And a lot of inspiration for poetry, it sounds
definitely
like.
And a lot of really amazing working poets too, in different languages and different poetic traditions. So that's been fun.
And it's amazing you say that more than 700,000 people live there, you know, so that's comparable to the population of the entire state of Alaska.
I know, I was thinking, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that's something I think we take for granted, how much nature we get to enjoy on a per capita basis up here.
Well, yeah, and it feels really different, too. I mean, you just kind of, you're like, oh, you can breathe a little bit up here, you know. It's fair, you can feel the fact that there's a lot of land out there.
There is, and it puts the nature of being a human being in more perspective, I think, when you're here than sometimes when you're in the big city. But I love the big city, too. You know,
yeah.
I will never trade the time I live in New York for anything else. And so, I mean, it's good to have a multiplicity of experiences. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, Carolyn, this afternoon?
I wouldn't. Just that I do hope to see people tonight, and I'm really looking forward to sharing the stage with Ishmael and Cray. I'm grateful for the opportunity, and thanks to 49 Writers for providing the opportunity.
Well, I'm sure you will have a good crowd tonight and a good crowd on Thursday, and I wish you wonderful success and enjoyable times while you're here in Juneau. And I, again, hope that people learn a whole lot if they are able to sign up for your List and Litany class on Thursday night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carolyn. Yep.
say so long and so recall the call of life. La 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 la. You're going home now. Home's that place somewhere you go each day. See your wife. See your wife. Whoa, talk to me some more. You don't have to go. You're the poetry man. Things are right, yeah. Oh, talk to me some more. You don't have to go. You're the poetry man. You make things all right.
It's about 21 minutes after the hour this Tuesday, the 15th of December. This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Ben Brown, your host. And we are now going to hear from Emily Cote-Thompson with the Parents as Teachers program and Katie Blagden with the Association for the Education of Young Children. Katie and Emily, welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And so what exciting news do you have to share with us about how we can make young people all that they can be?
Well, we have a fabulous program in Juno called the Juno Parents as Teachers program. And Parents as Teachers is a free home visiting program for families that have children prenatal up to age 3. We're also really part of a larger national program, so there's parents and teachers all over the United States. And currently we serve 35 families and 45 children, but this year we've served 62 families and 84 children. And what that means is we get to come to the house about once a month, and we bring an activity for parents and children to do together that is kind of based on what developmental stage the child is on. And then we talk about what might be coming up next in development, you know, like, oh, well, your child may start walking soon, and so let's talk about childproofing and kind of take some of the guesswork out of parenting in the first 3 years. And then we also really work on helping parents link up with resources in the community, like did you know there's a family night or there's free turf for tots, and really help them feel more connected to other parents, because that can be kind of isolating the first 3 years especially. And then we really work with parents to be able to set goals and think about things proactively, that sometimes that's such a hectic time and such a stressful time in your life that we just kind of reflexively do different things. And so we like to take a moment and really allow parents to think, like, is this how you want to parent? Is this what you like? If not, like, what can we change? And really give them that moment of breathing room.
Is there variety among the families that you serve in terms of the number of children that they have, if they're single or two-parent families, those sort of details of the family structure?
Yeah, definitely. What's really neat about our program is it is universal. It's open to anyone. A lot of programs will have different stipulations where you have to meet certain qualifications, but we're very lucky in Alaska or in Juneau that we've been able to find funding that allows it to be a universal program. We do have a higher preference for families experiencing higher stress. So we have lots of military families, single parent, double parent, because in Juneau, 80% of families with young children have to work, both parents work full time.
Uh-huh.
And that creates an additional stress in terms of childcare and not enough time to get everything done. And so we do like to have a variety of the parents that we serve. And about 50% of our families have more than one children,
okay,
one child in the family.
And some of them probably have children that are older that didn't have the advantage of having their parents be in the Parents as Teachers program, and so they're kind of learning with the second or the third child, wow, we can do this a little bit differently.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the really neat things about our program is that we can hold every family for 3 years. So it's until your youngest child turns 3 or until your family as a whole has had 3 years service. And we actually had to put that stipulation on because parents enjoy it so much that they get pregnant with their second, and they're like, another 3 years.
You know? And so, it doesn't reset the clock.
It doesn't reset the clock, unfortunately, yeah. So you just get 3 years for your family. But it can be a great resource for, you know, there's different times. Like when you're a first-time parent, there's so many questions. And then when you're a second-time parent, that second child is born into a different family because the parents have kind of been through the ringer. So you have different challenges and different questions, and then you have siblings to think about, and how do you split up the attention for both and make sure both children are getting what they need? So we're just kind of there as a support to walk with the families for those first 1,000 days of life.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's probably helpful when you have two parents who are working, how they can figure out to be there when they're there when the other one's working.
Absolutely. And also, you know, one of our big things is talking about things like mealtime, like, well, how were you raised? What did you do in mealtimes? Okay, what did you do in your household? Because like I said, you know, when you choose to have a child together, you don't necessarily sit down and hammer out all of your different family values. And so that's a lot of the benefit of the program, is it gives a time out of like, okay, what did you do? How were you raised? What did you like? What did you not like? And then be able to compare and say, what do we want to do as partners?
And so people are like, you know, we don't have to have the television on throughout dinner every single night.
Yeah.
Like maybe one night a week we can do that.
Compromise. That's all about.
Absolutely. And so the Parents as Teachers program, you said that you are appreciative of the funding you have because it allows you to do a pretty wide array of service. Who are the actual instructors that are going out and working with these families? Where do they come from, and what kind of training are they receiving?
Well, it's actually myself and two other educators.
So there's just three of you doing all this work.
Yeah, there's just three of us, and we're all part-time right now because of funding requirements. So we are funded this year by the state of Alaska, which was fantastic, and also through the Hope Endowment Grant. And so, you know, given the state of funding right now, like we're also, you know, continually looking for all other funding sources as well. But we've been really fortunate and lucky to secure those two. And, yeah, there's just the three of us. And besides having, you know, college and degrees and everything like that in the field of early childhood, we've also worked in different aspects of early childhood. And then we've each attended a week-long training that kind of trains you on how specifically to use the curriculum. And since we're part of a national program, we report back our results to the national center so that we make sure that our program is validated. And the Parents, Teachers, Children in the program, it's been going on now long enough they've been able to look at children that have attended college. And we know that children in the program tend to have better school readiness skills because their parents feel more confident and they're more involved in their education. And then it also is a known predictor to reduce child abuse and neglect.
Mm-hmm. So. And, I mean, anecdotally, no one's ever going to argue with it on that. But, I mean, to be able to report it back to a national center that's collecting the data in a more formal manner probably creates more opportunities for funding of this kind of work.
Absolutely, yeah. We all know, I mean, with all the great studies like the ACEs study, we know that there's so many things that are life-lasting for early childhood that it is your foundation for life. And so if we can get in there at the very beginning and really create strong relationships for children and parents and give parents the best, you know, footing that they can have in the beginning, that really just sets children off for success later on as well.
Absolutely. So, Katie, what about the Association for the Education of Young Children? What's going on with AEYC right now?
So we house a variety of different programs. Parents as Teachers is one of the programs that's at AEYC. And then we also hold a bunch of different events around town. So right now, for example, this Thursday on December 17th from 5:30 to 7, we are going to have our second preschool family night. So we're really looking at kids, or looking for kids to come who are ages 3 to 5. And our theme this time is Measuring the Mighty Trees. So Cal Riker of the Last Frontier Forestry and Tree Service, he's going to come and talk a little bit about measuring trees. And we have free books, a little food, and a craft that we're all going to do kind of surrounding like measurement and all of that. So these are really fun events, and they're happening every month on the third Thursday of the month. We had our first one last time, and it's also actually in partnership with a Ready for Kindergarten curriculum. So someone's going to take parents and kind of teach them different methods for preparing their preschooler for kindergarten in the next couple of years. So that's one of the programs that we're doing at AUIC, among a bunch of different things. We have Turf for Tots every second and fourth Friday of the month from 5 to 6:30 with partnership agencies, and that's really fun. So we just are kind of providing different programs and support for families and parents around town.
And if people want to learn more about this, I'm going to guess it's at the AEYC website.
That's correct. The website is www.aeyc-sea.org.
And that has the Turf for Tots, the monthly Thursday programming, and also does it have information about the Parents as Teachers program?
It does. We also have a Facebook page. The parents can find us on that way through AEYC. And if anyone wants to sign up for the Parents as Teachers, you can just call 789-1235 and ask for Parents as Teachers.
And do you feel like you have capacity to add more families at this point?
We always have capacity to add more families onto the waiting list because that's kind of how we show that there's a need for the program. What's neat is we've now been doing it for 4 years, and so we have openings, 2 to 3 openings every couple of months, and so we're able to move families in that way. We also take referrals from pediatricians in town and
other ways to fast track in families that might need additional support.
And then where the intervention, if it doesn't happen now, it's not going to be as beneficial, and they can kind of jump the list a little bit to help meet a critical need.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that certainly sounds like a wise way to allocate scarce resources to me. Katie, is there anything else you wanted to share with us about AUIC?
Yeah, there's also another website called junofamilies.org, and every month we post a Juno Family Bulletin on there, which has all of the events that are going on throughout Juno for children under five and families. So that's also a really great resource for parents.
And those are things that are not necessarily sponsored by AUIC, but of which you're aware that you think are going to be a good fit for the folks that you serve.
Right, exactly, yeah.
All right. And, of course, there are a lot of those things out there, you know, from, I mean, I guess Zach Gordon doesn't serve kids that young, but even up at Eagle Crest or the Treadwell Arena, the swimming pools, there are programs that are targeted for very young children that might be of interest to families with those young kids.
Yeah, so you can just go on there and we have the list of all of the things that we know about, print it off and hang it on your refrigerator, and then you know of the different activities that are going on around town from Eagle Crest to the pool or wherever, so.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like a really valuable resource. JunoFamilies.org.
Yep, JunoFamilies.org.
A really valuable resource for families that are looking to maximize the quality time that they're spending together doing recreational things that have more than just a recreational benefit.
Yeah.
Anything else, Emily or Katie, you'd like to share with our listeners this Juno afternoon?
No,
I don't think so.
Well, thank you for your good work in the community. Strengthening those families strengthens all of us. So I wish you the best as you get these December events going forward. And hopefully anyone who's listening will get in touch with you through the AEYC website so they can learn more about the Parents as Teachers program and the other great offerings that you have. So thanks again.
Thank you so much for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 15th of December, 2015. The Bill of Rights was ratified by the United States on this day in 1789, 10 amendments to the Constitution, guaranteeing the freedom of the press, the right to bear arms, freedom of religion, the right to trial by jury, and other basic rights. James Madison was one of the great proponents, and he rewrote the First Amendment, which had said the government ought not interfere with freedom of the press, and Madison scratched that out and wrote that it shall not. It's the birthday of the civil engineer Gustave Eiffel, born in Dijon, France, 1832, who built the Eiffel Tower for the World's Fair in Paris, 1889. 1,000 feet high, the tallest structure in the world at the time. He built it of metal scaffolding so that it would be more stable, so the wind could blow right through it. And in 1999, Paris was hit by a windstorm, knocked down more than 100,000 trees. The Eiffel Tower only swayed 9 centimeters. Many people at the time thought the Eiffel Tower was very ugly, but they are all dead, and the tower still stands. It's the birthday of Edna O'Brien, County Clare, Ireland, 1930. She was a pharmacist living in London, 1954. She went to a lecture given by Arthur Misner on Hemingway, and Misner read out the first paragraph of Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms. She said, "I couldn't believe it, this totally uncluttered, precise, true prose, which was also very moving and lyrical." And she decided to write. Her first novel, The Country Girls, took her only 3 weeks, published 1960. The book, its 2 sequels, and 6 of her other books were all banned in Ireland. Her memoir, Country Girl, came out in 2012. And it's the birthday of the Emperor Nero, born in Antium near Rome in the year 37 A.D., who, according to legend, fiddled while Rome burned. Probably not true. There were no fiddles in Rome at the time, and he most likely wasn't even in the city, and besides, his instrument was the lyre. He was a ruthless dictator. He ordered the death of his own mother and his first wife. He didn't trust them. He became delusional late in his career, scandalized people appearing in theatrical productions. Finally, the Roman Senate condemned Nero to a slave's death, crucifixion, and he fled the city and killed himself rather than face his own execution. Here's a poem for today by William Stafford over in Montana. Winter stops by for a visit each year. Dead leaves cluster around. They know what is coming. They listen to some silent song. At a bend in the Missouri, upwards clear, teal and mallards lower their wings and come gliding in. A cottonwood grove gets ready. Limbs reach out. They touch and shiver. These nights are going to get cold. Stars will sharpen and glitter. They make their strange signs in a rigid pattern above hollow trees and burrows and houses. The great story weaves closer and closer. Millions of touches, wide spaces lying out in the open, huddles of brush and grass, all the little lives. Over in Montana, a poem by William Stafford from Even in Quiet Places, published by Confluence Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
It's about 37 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to A Juno Afternoon this Tuesday, the 15th of December. I'm Ben Brown. Our next guests are Annie Bartholomew and Andrea Campbell, and they're going to tell us about KTOO's Serial Podcast Listening Party coming up at COPA. So, Andrea and Annie, welcome to A Juno Afternoon.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for fitting us in.
It's my pleasure to have you here, and I think our listeners are going to be excited to hear about the Serial Podcast. So, without any further ado, tell us what's going on.
Ooh, so last year, Serial, it was a spinoff of This American Life. Hope you're familiar with that program, because Serial is even more incredible.
It's pretty great. I came in a little late last year, and then I completely binged on it. I don't even know.
It's a nonfiction podcast where they revisit this crime that took place in 1999. A young woman was murdered, and the story just unfolds. Anan Saeed was convicted of the charges and has been in prison but has maintained his innocence. And Sarah Koenig, producer with This American Life, goes and contacts him on the phone, and it's all this drama of did he do it, didn't he do it, let's investigate, who are the other players in it. And so throughout the whole series, you get to the bottom of it, but you don't actually get to the bottom of it. And that's why we wanted to have a party to get all of the Serial superfans and Juno together now that season two has started back up.
So this is basically a binge listening event at COPA.
Not necessarily. I don't know that we have enough time for that Thursday night, but we are going to listen to the new season, the first episode of the new season.
No, the second episode, which comes out Thursday.
Okay. The second episode.
I'm so excited.
So it's super fresh. You're doing it on Thursday, and it comes out on Thursday.
Yes.
Okay.
But
yeah,
we want to revisit the first season, too.
But
because
not in its entirety, because that would be all day.
We're just talking the talk. There's still a lot of unanswered questions that need to be resolved by the people of Juno.
There's a lot to uncover there.
And the more minds and ears you have to listen, the likelier it is you're going to get to the bottom of this thing.
Or it's going to end in a heated debate. I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen.
We want people to come to COPA Thursday night, 5:30. Bring your theories. Be prepared to defend them. We're going to have some fun activities. Instead of wearing a name tag with your name, you're going to write who you think did it.
In season one.
And then at 6 o'clock, we're all going to sit down and listen to the latest episode from season 2, where Sarah Koenig calls the Taliban.
It's true. This is how she ended the last episode from last week.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And
are we just blowing your mind, Ben? Are we on a different planet right now?
Well, what I'm wondering is, where's the ineffective assistance of counsel claim? The attorney in me is wondering, you know.
You would love this because...
Did he have a lame attorney, or was he not so lame? Or
he had a questionable attorney,
okay.
And we dig into that a little bit. I mean, she touches on everything. She touches on the family, his attorney, his friends, his schoolmates, all of it. And it's really kind of interesting to get everyone's point of view and see that there were a few things that were not brought to the table as far as evidence was concerned, an alibi that went unsaid in court. It's pretty intense.
And it's all happening in real time, too. His trial is being revisited. So you can find it all out online. There's so many pieces.
And where is that website that people can go to? Because a lot of people, maybe this is the first time they're hearing about this, and they are going to want to go binge listen to the entire first season before they come to this event on Thursday night. So if people really want to dive into this Serial podcast thing, where do they go?
I would Google Serial podcast.
And you can listen a number of different ways. They have it on Pandora. You can actually listen on the Serial website, and I believe it's Serial.org. And then there are a couple other places you can stream. But it's free, and it's awesome. I highly recommend it.
Well, it sounds quite interesting. And it sounds kind of like a unique event having a podcast listening party. So is this the first time this has happened in Juneau, at least?
As far as we know.
But it's probably not going to be the last,
nope.
Is it?
No. That's part of the fun. We want to get everybody together and see if we can do more Serial listening parties. I know when the season finale came out in other places around the U.S., they had people getting together at 8 a.m., eating cereal and listening to the finale.
There were tears
by the end. And they did it in like a bar. So maybe at the end of this season, we'll all get together in some fancy place and
eat some cereal.
And eat some cereal. Wash down with God knows what to help you stomach the grisly details of what's actually maybe happening by
exactly.
that point. And so this first ever Serial podcast listening party is going to be this Thursday at COPA.
Mm-hmm.
And people are encouraged to get there a little early.
I show up at 5:30 for just like conversation, mingling. We just want to get all the listeners together. And then at 6 o'clock, we'll quiet down and listen to season 2, episode 2.
And if they want to get the name tag of whoever they think is the guilty party, they're going to have to get there a little early, too, because there's not going to be time for that at 6 because the listing will already have begun.
And no one's going to pay attention at that point.
Mm-mm. Right.
We're moving on to season 2.
Bo Bergdahl is the case that they're looking at now.
Yep.
And really incredible so far.
No, that obviously is one that has just hit the headlines in the past couple of days, and the big disparity between what was recommended for a punishment and what may happen as a court martial goes forward.
Mm-hmm.
So very and all real, nonfiction listeners,
yep.
Nonfiction.
Completely
you can't
real.
Make this stuff up. Well, Andrea and Annie, anything else you want to tell our listeners about the upcoming Serial podcast listening party at COPA or anything else related to the Serial phenomenon that is before us?
If you haven't listened, I recommend you listen now, and then we'll see you on Thursday.
All right.
We're excited.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And to take us out, if you want to get more involved in this would be the theme song from Serial.
Thank you.
Support comes from the Copper Wheel Inn, located in downtown Anchorage, near the city's restaurants, galleries, museums, and business district. The Copper Wheel Inn, with reservations online at copperwhale.com.
Program support provided by Northern Oasis Wellness Spa, participating in the Women, Wine, and Wishlist event on Thursday, December 17th. Gift certificates available for all spa services and products. More information at nowspajuno.com.
It is about 15 minutes before the hour. It's Tuesday, the 15th of December. I am Ben Brown. This is a Juno afternoon. And our next guests this afternoon are the activities directors, respectively, Jake Jacoby from Thunder Mountain High School and Chad Bentz at Juno Douglas High School. So, gentlemen, welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you, Ben. Glad to be here and happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you're happy as well. And I am sure that our listeners are eager to know about some of the activities going on at Juno's two high schools. So in the spirit of rivalry, do the Crimson Bears or the Falcons want to go first? Do we have to toss a coin? Are you going to arm wrestle? Or have you got something figured out here for me?
We have a number of different activities going on right now. We just finished up with volleyball, football, cross-country, tennis, swim, dive. Those finished up, and now we just started, and hockey is going now. We just started last week, boys and girls basketball and cheerleading, basketball cheer, and as well, beginning of the year, our dance team, both dance teams have been working and practicing so far this year.
Okay, so that does sound like a pretty extensive list of activities going on. Is that pretty well mirrored, Jake, at TMHS, or are there different things that happen at the schools that don't happen at the other one?
Well, no, they're pretty well mirrored. The only main difference between the two schools right now would be hockey. Hockey not happening out at Thunder Mountain, but other than that, we've got pretty much the same list of activities going. Boys, girls basketball starting off strong right now, getting ready to have some of our first games, JV games next week, and then first home varsity games early January. It's a busy time of year, basketball in Southeast Alaska, lots of games going on. Other big things, we've got our wrestlers from both schools, JD and Thunder Mountain. They just went down to Petersburg, competed at the regional tournament. Both teams did real well and send in quite a few guys up to the state tournament in Anchorage this weekend. So good luck to you all, you wrestlers up in Anchorage, and hope you do well.
Absolutely. And on the JD side, we have our annual Capital City Classic that starts December 27th, this December, so in a couple weeks, and Sunday being the shooting contest where we'll have the three-point free throw and dunk contest. And then we have... for the girls, Chugiak, Kenai, and Sitka coming in. And for the boys, we have Heidelberg, Sitka boys, and Kent Lake, a team from Washington. So game times are going to be at Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, starting at 1, 3, 5, and 7, Monday through Wednesday. So it'll be good basketball. And teams from out of town and out of state even. So the basketball cheer, the pep band, and dance team will be playing as well and are performing. And it should be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. And I know our coaches in both schools, both coaches, players, programs are eager to get going.
Well, it sounds like on the athletics front, then, there is just about as much going on for the young people in Juneau as there possibly could be.
There is. There's lots of opportunity for kids to get out there and, you know, participate in school activities and sports. There's also activities going on right now. Our drama and debate teams just came back from a meet where I know at Thunder Mountain we had our debaters were number one. We had champions in the debate side and some top placers on the drama side as well. So congratulations to you all. And now season will continue. We'll have a meet here in town in January, starting on January 15th. That'll be at Thunder Mountain, our drama and debate event, if anyone's interested in coming and checking out what that's all about. There's a whole lot of different things that go on at a drama and a debate competition. It's a pretty packed schedule for a couple of days.
And I actually did that when I was a Palmer High School student, when I was a Moose. And it's pretty interesting, the combination of people who are theater people and then the people who are debaters. They're not necessarily the same types. And so to have them participating in an event that has both forms of performance or competition going on is a nice mixture, I think.
It is a nice mixture. And we've got a couple of great coaches that take those respective sides and work together. But you're right, very separately at the same time.
And we try to there's, you know, the different – whether it's athletics or activities, you know, the both schools I know are real interested, and we want as many students to participate in athletics or activities, because it's proven over time. Many studies have shown and proven that participation in extracurricular activities helps those percentage rates go up, the graduation the percentage, the attendance rate. Attendance is currently at 94% with people that participate in those activities. So it's a real big priority. It really helps kids focus on the academic part, where sometimes if they didn't have that responsibility, if they don't, because obviously if they don't have the grades, they don't travel. And
right.
That's a big incentive for a lot of students. So it does take a lot of work to keep these programs going, and a lot of fundraising as well. And both schools do a great job, and this community is just fantastic at supporting the programs for the kids. And it's pretty unbelievable.
Right.
So we're very happy, and we're going to continue to just build and maintain these programs so we can keep those numbers high and try to get them higher that we want the good ones that we want to keep going.
Well, it's about connecting.
Uphill.
You know, kids need a reason to want to go to school every day. And, of course, part of that reason is what they're learning in their classes. But to have something outside of that, whether it's a sports team that they're on or a play that they're in or a debate they're preparing for, that, and I certainly know that was part of my experience. I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir. You guys know that that's what made you care about school when you were young, and that's probably why you're so inspired to be activities directors today. So I'm going to ask one very selfish question in my capacity as chairman of the State Council on the Arts. Poetry Out Loud is coming up, and students at both schools are probably already signing up to do the poetry recitation in their respective classrooms.
Absolutely, yeah. The Poetry Out Loud competition is... it's been a great one over the last couple of years. We've had some students from the Juneau School District, you know, go on to the bigger competitions from it. And it's something that I know our English teachers really look forward to working through in their classrooms. It gives kids a good reason to focus on poetry and on speaking and public speaking in their classes. And it gives them a way to, you know, compete at it, which a lot of students, you know, a good reason to try real hard is because there's a competition.
And the finals, of course, are now held here in the capital city in March. So we'll have students from around the state coming down to participate in those. Broadcast live on 360 North. The recitation will take place down in the 360 space. And if you didn't know, I'm going to just give a quick plug here. The national winner last year, Mava Ordaz, was a West High School senior. And I happened to be in D.C. for a National Assembly of State Arts Agencies meeting when she won. And it was amazing to see her win. And I look forward to seeing more Alaskans win that recurringly. So no pressure, but you can't win nationals if you don't participate in the classroom. So there,
very
my
true,
shameless
lately.
Plug for Poetry Out Loud. So anything else? I guess if listeners want to know how to be supportive, obviously they can attend sports games, they can attend performances, they can buy raffle tickets or anything else that's being sold by a young person or that young person's family to generate the resources. But if people want to just kind of know what's going on, is there a place at the Juneau School District website that they can get this information?
Yeah, great segue. I first wanted to thank all of the sponsors that we have in this community. I mean, there's no way I could list them all off because it's businesses, it's individuals, it's everyone who supports our program. So we really do appreciate it. And
absolutely.
One great way to support is to go to the events and go to the games. And I know that you can find upcoming events on both of our school websites. If you go to the Thunder Mountain homepage or the Juneau Douglas homepage from the main Juneau School District website, right there on the homepage, there's a calendar of events, and you can scroll down and see all upcoming events and times associated with them. So that's probably your best shot at planning your weekends around some Juneau School District activities. And we really do appreciate all those that come out and support our youngsters, and they really work hard to give you a good show.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Jake Jacoby and Chad Bentz. Any final words you want to share with our listeners this Juneau afternoon?
Just one last call out to any officials hiding in the dark in Juneau. We're really hard up for officials, especially on the basketball side. So if you've had any experience or none experience at all, we'd love to see you come out. You can email me, jake.jacoby@junoschools.org, if you want more information. But it's a good way to help support our kids and also make a few bucks on the weekends. So we'd appreciate anyone who wants to come out and ref some of our games.
And just hope everyone, wish everyone a happy holiday season and be safe. And if you are not doing anything, the 27th through the 30th, come out to JD. And even if you're from TM, we're Juno schools, Juno schools. And, you know, it's going to be a good time.
But. And we'll have a game against Chugiak at Thunder Mountain on the 26th at 8 p.m. So that's also a game we've added in the mix, Saturday the 26th at 8 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School, our varsity girls team against the Chugiak varsity girls. So you can come out and see some Thunder Mountain basketball.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Jake Jacoby, Chad Bentz. Happy holidays to both of you, and keep up the good work as activities directors at your schools.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This is Bird Note. Long-distance migration can be hard on a bird's body, and finishing the journey can require some trade-offs. So, for example, a Swainson's thrush might migrate all the way between northern Canada and South America twice a year. In the weeks before such a long journey, and during key stopovers en route, the thrush eats like crazy to put on fat. That's the basic fuel it draws on, by oxidizing fatty acids stored beneath the skin, in the abdomen, and in its muscles. During the intense breathing brought on by the sustained flight, much of the body's water supply is used up too. To keep flying, a Swainson's thrush needs to access extra water that's stored in the proteins that make up its internal organs, and especially in its muscles. Metabolizing this muscle tissue generates 5 times more water than metabolizing the fat supplies. Experiments with Swainson's thrushes flying in wind tunnels, under moist and dry conditions, have shown that the birds have evolved to do precisely this. It's a balancing act. They lose some muscle, but gain some water, and are able to complete the ideal migratory path. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
About 2.5 minutes before the hour. You've been listening to a Juno Afternoon this Tuesday, the 15th of December. I'm Ben Brown. Thanks so much for listening. The weather forecast from our friends at the National Weather Service. For the rest of the day is for clouds. Scattered rain showers, a high around 37 degrees, and east winds at 10 miles per hour. Tonight it will be mostly cloudy with some scattered rain showers in the evening, and isolated snow showers late with some patchy fog as well. A low around 28 degrees and southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, Wednesday, will be mostly cloudy with a high around 34, southeast winds to 10 to 20 miles per hour. Cloudy tomorrow night, snow and rain on Thursday, snow showers Thursday night, and some snow showers and clouds going into the weekend. So the snow will continue to accumulate up at Eagle Crest, where we're going to have a wonderful and delightful winter as we head into the holidays. If you haven't heard, Eagle Crest is opening the full mountain this Saturday and is going to remain open, I believe, every day through New Year's except for Christmas Day. So that is obviously a clear call to go and use your season pass and enjoy the mountain and enjoy all that the capital city has to offer. And thanks again for listening to a Juno Afternoon.